And if you remember, he had covered philosophers from Thales up to Aristotle. Now, he will, I think, take up Neoplatonic philosopher Plotinus and the medieval philosophers. I request Prof. Date to deliver his address.
Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday it was a thin edge of revenge. Today it is more difficult. The difficulty arises on account of the fact that the medieval period is considered to be a dark period. And what is happening in the university in India is that they jump over 1,000 years, you see, thinking that there existed nothing philosophical value. But this is a wrong idea. After Aristotle, there was not the deluge. It was the darkness of the intellect of men who wanted to study. But I feel somehow that the notion of the medieval period as being dark was nothing but a projection of the teachers of philosophy. For immediately after Aristotle, though there were schools before Aristotle and after Aristotle, the Cynics and the Cyrenaics, for example, before Aristotle, and the Stoics and the Epicureans after Aristotle. I have not made any mention of these because they contain nothing very special about it. And after Aristotle, we find that immediately the modern philosophy beginning with Descartes. As if there happened nothing. If you shut your eyes, then you see nothing. It is an ostrich-like policy. If the ostrich buries his head in the sand, below the sand, then who is to be blamed? Who is to blame? It is the ostrich and not the sun. Similarly, there were luminous, you see, you can say philosophers. The most luminous of all was Plotinus. And Plotinus is much like a lighthouse, not like a simple, you can say, a lamppost. But none had given him, probably because Plotinus is a hard nut to crack. Very few persons in the whole of the world have understood Plotinus. But it is absolutely necessary if one wants to know what is mysticism, he must know the philosophy of Plotinus. I shall just tell the important points in Plotinus. And I should be frank with you, yesterday as I told you, that I studied Plotinus along with my student who appeared for her PhD, Teresa Gabriel. She was most enthusiastic and I tried my best to help her and help myself. So whatever I have picked up from the study of Plotinus is due to the coincidence of her taking her PhD under me and I helping her. Yes. So Plotinus, I wanted to study, as I told you yesterday, in 1932, but I happened to study it in 1951, after the lapse of so many years. I give you the important ideas in Plotinus under two headings. The first heading is the relation between the one, the nous, and the also. The relation between one, below it, keep it nous, and below it, keep also. This is one. The second heading would be the relation between immanence and omnipresence. If you understand this, you understand, I think, the main points of Plotinus' philosophy. The one, the first point, in the heading number 1. The one is equal to the Brahman in Indian philosophy, or the Atman in Indian philosophy. That there is none excepted in the one. The one is all in all. He is at the highest, at the apex. You may consider it as God, or you may consider it as, you can say, as the absolute. Plotinus calls it as one. It is non-dual, non-plural. It is one only. Ekam Sat. So, what is the characteristic of that one? It is self-absorbed. What Aristotle calls as God contemplating upon himself, Plotinus says it is self-absorbed, absorbed in contemplating himself. Atma va are drashtavyaha. Atman should see the Atman. Atma va are drashtavyaha. By whom? By whom should the Atman should be seen? By anatman? It is impossible. So the Atman should be seen by the Atman alone. Similarly, Plotinus says that the one should be seen by one alone. It is self-absorbing. But is that the only thing? It is nothing but contemplation. Contemplation of God on himself alone. The Atman is contemplating upon contemplation, upon Atman. That's exactly what is meant by the one in Plotinus. If that is one characteristic of the one, no, it is self-giving also. Self-giving, meaning it gives its own essence to everything else. Just as the sun gives its essence, namely the light, to everything else in the world, in the universe, similarly the one gives its essence to everything else, namely its light. So that the characteristics of the one, according to Plotinus, is all-absorbing, self-contemplative, contemplating upon himself and giving it to others, meaning teaching probably others to contemplate as God contemplates upon himself. How can others contemplate upon God unless they become God? And Plotinus urges upon us the need of ethical and spiritual discipline. If you understand Plotinus, you will understand much of Indian spiritual life. I do not know whether Plotinus was really born there or born in India and then went afterwards. I find, as a matter of fact, absolute identity between the teachings of Plotinus and the teaching of our great saints. And therefore, though he is considered as one of the philosophers in the medieval period as dark ages, the ages were dark on account of your unwillingness to see. If you shut your eyes, the whole universe goes out of your mind. But if you open your eyes and see through the darkness, you will see the glory of God, nothing but that. Plotinus is like that. He is not simply a lamppost, but he is, we can say, a lighthouse. But that lighthouse also, we are unable to see if we close our eyes. And Indian universities have closed their eyes to this medieval period, to a mine of, you can say, illumination. Plotinus is like that. The one I was thinking is anything, self-absorbing and self-giving. And when you give something to others, if you have 100 rupees and if you give 25 rupees to others, you will be short of 25 rupees and there will be only 75 rupees. No, such is not the case. Without anything losing of himself. The sun gives its light, you know, you must be knowing, some of the science students must be knowing, emitting light. How much light and how much light? So if 60 volumes as great as the earth are burnt every day, how much how much light and how much you can say heat will go out of it. You know the circumference, 24,000 miles this Earth circumference with an 8,000 radius, this whole block have such 60 blocks of fuel and burn them, and the heat that is produced out of these 60 blocks of Earth would be equal to the light which is emitted out of the sun in one day. And that is for millions and millions of years going on. Such a tremendous energy is there in the sun. Sir James Jeans has said it is the dying sun. Let him die at any time, we don't mind it. And we shall die along with him. But he will never die on account of the fact that there is helium in it. He absorbs the helium. And therefore, there is another opinion that the sun will never die. And supposing the sun dies, then the energy, that the source of the energy of the sun, will it die? It will not. That is the one beyond the sun. Yad bhasa bhasate suryaha. On account of whom the sun shines. On account of whom the sun shines, that is the highest God. And that is what you mean by the one in Plotinus. Plotinus, I am giving only an analogical argument about the sun and his light and the heat. But beyond all that, there is the one, the supreme being, the highest God. You can saw the source of all, everything, of heat, light, energy, everything there. It is the source of all the good and the bad things in the world. You see, of everything that exists, it is the essence of all. That is what Plotinus says. The one is that. And from that one, there is the derivative principle, which he called the nous, N-O-U-S. Nous means intelligence. But I do not understand what is meant by intelligence. In the Bhagavad Gita, you get a picture of Sitaprajna. Sitaprajna is not the ideal of our life. People ask in the university also questions, what is meant by, what gives the characteristics of Sitaprajna? They are set questions, and there are set answers also. But that is not, you have not understood what is meant by Sitaprajna. Nous is intelligence. I do not agree with this, that it is intelligence simply. It is intelligence plus the grace of God. Himself, Plotinus himself says, when the nous is lifted up, my mark is, when the nous is lifted up, by whom? I ask the question, who lifts the intelligence up? Who lifts the intelligence up? It is the grace of God. It is the grace of that one. You see, who lifts the nous, that is intelligence in man, upwards. And then, of course, it is possible to see that one, otherwise not. You may do whatever efforts you like. The human efforts may be many, innumerable. From cradle to the grave, you may work and work, yet you will not succeed unless you are backed by the grace of God. So, Plotinus himself says that unless that nous is lifted up by the grace of God, nous is impossible to see. It is impossible for the nous to see God. And to see God is the first stage of becoming one with God, identical with God. Sat, Rupa, Chid Rupa, and Tad Rupa, these are the stages in the spiritual life. You see God, but that is not exactly being identical with God. I see the table before me. I am not becoming identical with the table, because the table and myself are two different things. Even if you see this one, you are not identical with the one. It is the ethical and the spiritual discipline, Plotinus says, that make you identical. Because why? Ethical and the spiritual discipline is the measure of the goodness in you. It is the measure of goodness in you that your ethical, your moral and the spiritual discipline. To the degree to which you are morally and spiritually disciplined, to that degree you are good. And to that degree you have the capacity to see the world. A man goes to the river with a small pitcher or a large pitcher. He can bring the water that much only and nothing more. So that to the extent to which you are graced by God, you alone, to that extent you can see the one. Otherwise it is not impossible according to Plotinus. And therefore he makes the similar distinction between reason and intuition. Intuition is, nowadays there is, the personality of man is measured in terms of thought, thinking, feeling and willing. That is a partial personality. We have got a partial picture of personality. Personality is complete when it is at the back of them all, there is the intuition. Very beautifully, you see, Plotinus puts it, reason goes from point to point, while intuition flies into heaven with detail. And comes, reason is restless because it has to travel from point to point. And when intuition flies, then it has on three wings, then it is a state of repose, it is a state of rest, it is a state of contemplation, it is a state of freedom, he says. Full freedom you can have only with full identity of one with God. If you become identical with God, there exists full freedom. You have partial freedom, no doubt, in your ethical and moral, in your ethical and spiritual efforts, in your bhakti, in your devotion, you have partial freedom. Because you are torn between two things. On this side there is samsara, on that side there is God. And between the two you have to work, sometimes working in your family and sometimes working along with God. So it is a partial freedom. And there is no freedom at all in the phenomenal world where everything is bound by causation. So there is no freedom in the phenomenal world because everything you bring is cause and effect. You don't go beyond phenomenal world. If you want to go beyond the phenomenal world, then you must take resort to only two things, namely the moral and the spiritual discipline. That is goodness, he says. And from that, you go to the full freedom, namely of contemplation. So, intuition leads you to contemplation. Reason leads you to the causal necessity. So, necessity is not the starting point. Necessity is the product. He says, product, he says. It is not the source, it is the product of freedom. The one is free everywhere. And if you become identical with one, you are also free. Because there exists only one and not two, not multiplicity. You say. Therefore, there no all distinctions vanish. When you become identical with them, there is perfect freedom. So, the movement is from one. It appears to us as if we are going from cause to effect. No, it is not. Causation is a product of that freedom. How it is proved? When you come from one to the nous, then nous is an intermediate stage between one on the one hand and the all souls. It is new thing. All souls. All soul is ambiguous to some extent. It has got two meanings. One is all soul, meaning Ishwara or God. Another is all soul means all souls in the world, all finite beings in the world. So when there is, you derive news from where? From God, from the Absolute, from the One. One comes downwards in the form of intelligence plus grace, and that again comes down in the form of all souls. Therefore, we are all rational beings. We are endowed with reason, but reason will not be helpful unless there is grace in the form of intuition. Dadami buddhi yogantam yena mam upayanchite. The Bhagavad Gita says, I give the buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga does not mean any means, it's not. Buddhi yoga means that buddhi which leads on to God, and that is known by the technical word intuition. Dadami buddhi yogantam. This same was repeated in another form in the Bhagavad Gita, and natumam shakyase rashtum anenaima svachakshusha divyan dadami te chakshu yogam paschame yogameshwaram. In the 11th adhyaya he says, yes, see my hundreds and hundreds in a universal form, and he could not see. And Krishna became immediately aware, yes, Arjuna could not see because he has not been endowed with the Divya Chakshu. Natumam shakyase drashtum anenaima svachakshusha. By these physical eyes you will not be able to see. By these human efforts you will never be seen. But by my grace alone, by my self-giving, you will be able to see. That is what he says, Krishna says to Arjuna. So, what is that? The news is nothing but what is the grave human effort plus the grace of God. And it is this grace of God which is absolutely necessary, and that comes as a consequence on account of the moral and the spiritual discipline. That moral and the spiritual discipline is not invented by man. We have to find it out. Gold is not invented. We have to find out, make a search in the gold, deep in the mines, and then make a search about it. See the other men, what great saints have done. It is that which we have to see. We have to follow in the footsteps of the Son, and then we shall get the grace of God. It is not without any purpose that His grace is thrown on you, you see. Whether you deserve it or not, we should first deserve and then try to preserve what we have got. It is not that we should have preserved. Preserve what? Preserve non-entity. Preserve nothing. We should get it first, and the road to getting it first is the moral and the spiritual discipline about which Plotinus speaks so eloquently. When they all souls, when I'm saying, it is the third stage. One, the news and the all souls. The all souls are looking upwards. The news is looking still upwards. And the news is looking downwards still. That is the way up and the way down. The spiritual and the moral way up and the way down. The same staircase will lead you to the higher and higher story and will bring you down. Urvangachandi sattvastha madhye tishtanti rajasa jaganya gunavrittistha adogachanti tamasa. The same thing. You can enlighten, you can make your salvation, bring out your salvation by going up and up, by the Kundalini Marg or whatever it is, up to the Sahasrara. There you will meet God, not before that. And in the middle, you will get what is the courage, for example, just as the three-party division by Plato. He says there are warrior class, there are the king's class, and there is the labor class. Jaganya gunavrittistha. Jagan means the buttocks, the waist. Jaganya gunavrittistha, whatever is downside, you see, below the waist, that is jaganya gunavrittistha. And madhye tishtanti rajasa, meaning that way the courage, the heart is the seat of the courage. Those who are courageous, those who are warriors, to them is given the seat. And urdhvangachanti sattvastha, that is from Trikuta onwards to Gollat, Srihat and Sahasrara, if they go that way, or by the way of the plexus or by the way of the Kundalini, then it is for them it is reserved. What is reserved? Similarly, for all the souls in the world, what is reserved? They must go by the path of the news. They must increase their intelligence. They must increase their faith. Faith and reason are not opposite to each other. There are some men who are rational, meaning they are intellectuals. Intellectual, one side of skepticism, you must remember. And blind faith is another side of skepticism. Both extremes meet, but between the two there lies the combination of faith and intellect. Prajneveena artha na kale ani vishwaseveena vastu na kale. Ramdas has said that prajneveena artha na kale. If you are intelligent, if you are dull, then you cannot understand what I speak. And then if you have no faith, then you can never reach Godhead. Absolutely not. So you must put faith as well as have intelligence to understand. It is the combination of prajna and it is the combination of faith. It is the combination of prajna, that is intelligence, plus grace. By that alone you can reach Godhead. So the all soul may be, no doubt, from one point of view, maybe all soul means Ishwara. Or from another point of all souls in the world, they will have their ascendance. How? Through the intelligence only. And intelligence don't understand in Plotinus as intelligence lifted up. That is what is lifted up by the grace of God. So intelligence plus the grace of God, that will lead you to the one. If you have intelligence simply, you will in course of time be skeptics only. And if you will be honest, no doubt, like Hume or the modern communists, but absolutely skeptic. Hume says, I play at tennis, I play at backgammon, but when I return home, I find myself gloomy and dreary. Why should he find gloomy and dreary? It is nothing but the natural reaction of the skepticism, you see, that he has nothing to live. He comes, he goes to the office, works hard, comes to the office and finds Hume, because Hume was a bachelor, you see. Hume was a bachelor again. So naturally, he had nothing at his place, home, and nothing at the office. Naturally, he must find himself gloomy and despair, and no relation with God, because he was a skeptic. So the end of all rationalism is nothing but skepticism. And the end of all faith, wrong faith, credulity, is nothing but skepticism. You will have adoration worship as the result of your faith. You will have skepticism as the result of your rationalism. But if you marry faith and reason, then you will have God alone. You see. Nothing but neither skepticism. You will cut skepticism by the double-edged sword of knowledge, on this side as well as on that side, and reach the golden mean of God. This all soul, for example, is important in this manner, that you have to rise to the news, and from that you have to take a leap upwards, namely to the one. I think I have done with the first point, great point on reading of the one, the news, and the all soul. I shall deal with the second point in Plotinus, which is very important also, namely the relation between emanation and omnipresence. Emanation and omnipresence. Omnipresence meaning, omni means all, and presence meaning the actual existence of God. God is omnipresent, they say. Without knowing, it is just a fashion to speak. God is omniscient. God is omnipotent. God is omnipresent. We do not know why. And we are taught like that, to speak like that. Parrot-like, we are just speaking the same things again and again. It is not so. What should we do? Just follow Plotinus and say what he says. Omnipresence, if you do not understand emanation, you will not understand omnipresence. And if you do not understand omnipresence, you will not understand emanation. Meaning you must understand emanation and omnipresence, these two conceptions, as if they are correlatives of each other, or you cannot understand anything. For example, husband and wife. I have an idea of what is meant by husband, and you don't know what is meant by wife? It is nonsense. I have got an idea of wife, and you don't know what is meant by husband? Either you must understand both the terms, or not understand them at all. That is the relation existing always between two correlative terms. I have given an example of that bit of husband and wife. Exactly so is the relation between emanation on the one hand and on what is known as omnipresence on the other in Plotinus. I shall explain what is meant by emanation. The sun emanates light by means of his rays. What are the rays? Every ray, if you look at it, you will see the sun. So what is he emanating? He is emanating himself, self-giving. The sun is giving himself in all the rays. Every ray is a sun by itself. And how many rays are there? Millions, multiplied by millions and millions and millions, in any number, infinite. Infinite are the rays of the sun, and infinite are the images of the sun. In every ray he is present. In every ray the sun is present. There is not a single ray in which he is absent. So, emanation comes from, you explain multiplicity in terms of unity. You explain the rays in terms of the sun. The sun is one, but he emanates into the rays, into thousands and millions of rays. He emanates in these several ways. That is emanation. And what is omnipresence? Omnipresence is just the same again, no doubt. That in all the rays, the one is present. In every ray, examine it, and you will find that one is present. In Niagara Falls, there were thousands of rainbows, not one. Wordsworth was enamored by one rainbow. When I see a rainbow in the sky, my heart lifts up. When you see thousands of rainbows, what will you do? Your heart will break, probably. When I see a rainbow in the sky, my heart is lifted up. That is what Wordsworth has risen. When I see a rainbow, thousands of rainbows I have seen, thousands of rainbows. Everywhere I was as if engulfed by a rainbow at the Niagara Falls. Dr. Pandey was there with me and he saw the same thing, I believe, and that is what rainbow. When you see that, then where is Wordsworth? Wordsworth, you must forget. Wordsworth only saw daffodils, lilies, and some rainbows. Is that all? Nothing. There are hundreds of mysteries in nature, and hundreds of mysteries in one. You see, hundreds and thousands of mysteries in that one. So when man comes face to face with these mysteries, will you care for the Wordsworthian nature poet? Will you care for that? Not in the least. You will have far gone beyond. You have become one with the sun. When you become one with the sun, then why should you be afraid of all these things? You see. That's why Plotinus says, when we understand, for example, that everything that is exists is nothing but an emanation from that source, namely one. When we find in the multiplicity presence of the one, then emanation and omnipresence become nothing but that one in multiplicity. One and a multiplicity, that is wrong. One in multiplicity. And multiplicity exists, multiplicity as an explanation of the one. You see one in multiplicity and you see multiplicity in one, you see. So there is not the one and the multiplicity, they are one and the same. But remember, when you see one and this, one and the many, the relation which is true, is the multiplicity equally real? Plotinus says it is real. That is one weakness in Plotinus' philosophy according to Shankaracharya. That when you see multiplicity, what is that multiplicity? It is nothing but the presence of the one. So one is always in presence of the multiplicity. That is true. It is present in every one ray. The sun is present. Yes. And what is the multiplicity? It is nothing but an emanation from the one. So from one point of view we explain the multiplicity. From another point of view we explain the one. So you are explaining one and the many from taking different views. That's all. So one and the many, they are the same. And that is why Plotinus is led to believe that the many are as real as the one. In a sense it is. Because we have explained multiplicity in terms of the one, and we have explained unity in terms of the multiplicity. We have no other choice before us. We have to explain emanation and omnipresence in this very manner as Plotinus has done. And therefore it will naturally appear that the multiplicity is nothing but the counterpart of the one, and the one is nothing but the counterpart of multiplicity. If there is one, if there is the counterparts, then the counterpart is as real as the original. But there, no, it is not so according to Shankaracharya. Remember, by the way, I am pointing out here that I should not point out when we come to Shankaracharya. Here also remember that Shankaracharya says when gold is, you can say, made into ornaments, what are the ornaments? To us the ornaments are real, especially to women, they are most real. You see, to us the ornaments are real, and if I use a bangle, I will be sorry for that. But, no, what are you sorry for that? And when you go to a goldsmith, I have given that example in my book, when you go to a goldsmith and just put your bangle, he only weighs it and looks at the gold. He looks to the carat of the gold. He looks to the purity of the gold and just gives you this much. He will tell you that this costs this much. That's all. But when you ask the gold itself, the metal gold itself, yes, I want to have some ornaments, you will not know what it is. If you ask the sun, what is darkness? The sun says, I have not seen darkness as yet. And if you ask the sun, what is your light? I have not known what is light. I know that I am, that's all. Nothing more than that. The sun will reply, I know that I am the sun, that's all. I do not know that there is light in me, or there is heat in me, or there is darkness in me, or I do not know anything about it. You are asking irrelevant questions. Similarly, to a common sense man, it may appear ornaments as real, but to a goldsmith, the ornaments are not real. It is the gold that is real, not the ornaments. And to the gold itself, it doesn't know what is meant by ornaments at all. Exactly the same position is. Plotinus makes the unconscious error of saying that the multiplicity is as real as the one. I have told you how the illusion occurs. But it is not. In Shankaracharya, for example, he has clearly, Shankaracharya, gone beyond Plotinus in this respect that the multiplicity is unreal. You see. Because the thousand and one ornaments can be turned into gold, and gold can be turned into ornaments again, as you like. So it is the gold. So the goldsmith has an eye upon the gold in the ornaments, not upon the shape or the name or the form of the ornaments. So Nama Rupa is illusion, an illusion according to Shankaracharya, but Nama Rupa is according to Plotinus is a reality. Accepting this difference, you see, Plotinus is speaking nothing but the words of Shankaracharya and having the same pulse in him of mysticism. He has gone far beyond theism, Plotinus. But we have forgotten, we have put in dark ages, meaning we have shut the doors against him and we do not see the Plotinus at all. If you see Plotinus, and if you understand Plotinus, I think I should not speak at all. Because you have understood everything about spiritual life. But none has understood. No teacher in Indian universities will teach Plotinus. I think Plotinus should be made compulsory. But in that case, there will be optional questions and optional answers. And in that way, no student will give an answer of Plotinus. I have seen the same thing about Kant. In my 35 years of teaching and examiner for several years of MA and others, I have not seen any student writing an answer about Kant, you see, because Kant has not been adequately taught. My apologies to the professors here, I do not know what is happening in this university, but I have seen in several universities, Kant is treated as a sort of straw. Kant is the greatest of the philosophers, as a mountain of Himalayas, going on which you see from all around. The pre-Kantian philosophy and the post-Kantian philosophy will be nothing but a joke for you, if you understand Kant. But Kant has not been understood, Kant has never been taught, and questions on Kant are only optional, and students can easily omit them. I have not seen a single student writing upon Kant. A single student, I mean student, not writing upon Kant. I would like to make Kant as compulsory. And three questions on Kant and two elsewhere. They would write about Socrates, about the Sophists, about Descartes, about something else which is nonsense, but is meant by innate ideas, and something about the give short notes on. That's all. That's all. Nothing more than that. And if they don't understand Kant, they can't understand philosophy. If they don't understand Kant, and if there is no knowledge of Kant, I would say that there is no knowledge of philosophy. And yet there will be first classes, yet there will be high second classes, etc. Without Kant. That is the fate of philosophy in India. I really pity it, but what can I do? What can I do? When all over India it is this state of affairs, then my voice, in a solitary voice, will not at all prevail. A candle will not remove all the darkness at night. A candle, you see. But you must understand that there is a candle at least, you see. And that will be, if you understand that Dharte has not spoken nonsense, that much is sufficient, you see. And if you take into head to study Plotinus, it will be good, no doubt. So the second point of Plotinus is this emanation and, you can say, and the measure of your goodness is lie, he says, from that. And if there is no measure of that, then there is a fall from God. And what is that fall? How you will measure the fall of God? The maximum departure from God. The maximum departure from one is the fall of God. Nous is a fall from one. And the all soul is still a big fall from one. And of course, and there is the vices and the erosion, and the absence of moral and spiritual discipline is still a greater fall from the sign of Plotinus. I pass on from Plotinus to another philosopher, namely St. Augustine. Saint Augustine was great in this sense that it is a link. Remember that all philosophies after Aristotle, as Moorehead has said, are nothing but footprints or footnotes. I'm sorry, footnote. I should not have uttered the word footprints. Footnotes on the philosophies of Plato and Aristotle. Nothing more. It is a statement coming from Moorehead, I believe. Is it not? Moorehead has said that. That all the post-Aristotelian philosophies are nothing but footnotes on the philosophies of Plato and Aristotle. He means to say that if you understand Plato and Aristotle, you will be able to understand all philosophies in the world. And I say, it is true, no doubt, that throughout the Western philosophy, if you have to understand anything, you have to understand the existence of self only, nothing more than that. And in Indian philosophy, we have to cancel, annihilate, cut that self. That is the fundamental difference between the West and the East, between the Western philosophy and the Eastern philosophy. To assert I is with all the emphasis which you have, is the characteristic mark of all Western philosophies, whether it is Kant or Hegel or post-Kantian philosophy. But to cancel all, to annihilate all, to destroy all, to destroy the self is the characteristic of Indian philosophy on the altar of the One. You will, in Western philosophy, you will sacrifice the One on the altar of the self. And in Indian philosophy, just the opposite, that you shall have to sacrifice the self on the altar of the all, of the One only. So on the altar of God, you have to devote everything, sacrifice everything. What remains of it? So that is the fundamental difference, as we shall see, proceed, and this is the one thing which I want to insist and just infuse in you, that learn to understand the great differences between the Western philosophy and Eastern philosophy. Therefore, I have called all the Western philosophies as intellectual only, and all the Eastern philosophies, at least some of them, as nothing but lighthouses, especially those of the saints and the sages. But we have closed our eyes, and the saints, they are devoted. There is something devotion which does not come in the purview of philosophy. I see. And whatever is non-devotional, that comes in the purview of philosophy. If that is the idea of philosophy, then it is better to root out philosophy, you see. And that no philosophy should be taught in any of the Indian universities. I pass on to Saint Augustine, and Saint Augustine, in his boyhood and in his adolescent period, he was a derelictus person. Derelictus meaning avoiding one's duties. His mother went to a saint called Ambrose and spoke about the religious characters of his son with shedding tears, and then saying, looked at him and looked at that lady and said, you see, these holy tears will not perish. And Saint Augustine was the fruit of that. Remember that. I have told something about that life. How a sinful man becomes a great saint. Augustine is an example of that. Saint Augustine. What did he do? He carried on the torch of Plotinus further and brought Aristotelianism along with reality. Aristotle taught us that God is the unmoved mover of the universe. When the whole universe moves, God does not move. I told you yesterday that God is beyond the clouds, and He manages everything from there, you see. Just as you see, we all go, as children especially, supposing yourself. Suppose yourself that you are children, and then somebody comes, Kashi ki gammat dekho, and then you look at the Kashi ki gammat through the eyes. What are you doing? Exactly so we are doing with God and everything. God, etc., and angels, etc., and the saints, yeah, they don't come in philosophy, in the purview of philosophy. We have nothing to do with it. We may attend it. That is what we do. So that mover of the cinematography is something different. He stands there, and he makes us to see that. So he is not involved in it. So Aristotle's God is not moved at all. He is the unmoved thing. Sitting there beyond the clouds, he is a deist and makes us move all. The same idea is in the Bhagavad Gita. Yantra Rudhani Maya. God puts us on the machine and revolves it. And we are in the machine of Prakriti and Tribhuna, you see. And he moves and moves, and we are being moved, and God is there. There is a deistic element even in the Bhagavad Gita. There is a theistic element in Bhagavad Gita. There is a mystical element in Bhagavad Gita. That it is a conglomeration of all these things, you see. That Bhagavad Gita is not that theism of Bhagavad Gita, as Radhakrishnan says. It is nothing but a misnomer. It is not the mysticism, it is not the devotion, it is not karma, it is not usual. It is being identified with God. And Professor Ganade's title, God, Bhagavad Gita, the realization of God. The philosophy of the God realization, as he says. Philosophy of God realization. You become a deist first for some time. You become an atheist afterwards, and you become a mystic again. This is the philosophy of God realization according to Professor Dhanavi. According to Radhakrishnan, it is theism of the Bhagavad Gita. Meaning, God is different from you. If God is different from you, then let him be different from me. What are we? Similarly, God is remaining above the clouds. Is he remaining above the clouds?